our guest today is Christopher Fogarty. His website is irishholocaust.org. He has a wonderful book. It is called Ireland, 1845 to 1850, The Perfect Holocaust and Who Kept It Perfect. One may acquire that book by contacting Christopher, which you can do at 312-664-7651, or email him at fogartyc@att.net. And the book is $25 plus $320 for shipping. All righty. I know that the U.S. military and other militaries occupy countries regularly, but it just is amazing that, I don't know, Ireland just seems, well, my people came from Ireland. They came quite a bit before the 1776, but I just don't get it. I just, the inhumanity of the whole thing just boggles one's mind. And I know that you mentioned that ignorance is bliss, and certainly that's true. And once you find out that things aren't so wonderful in the world as you're led to believe in government schools, then you must do something about it. And you felt the obligation to do that, and you've been doing a great job, and it has cost you. And yeah.
I must say, this St. Patrick's Day is the appropriate time to just tell a few other truths, that the Irish did not go down easily, 1845, 1850. It took more British firepower to starve, to murder 5.2 million people by starving them, removing what they had produced of all their livestock and grains and everything. It took more British firepower to starve Ireland than it took to conquer the Indian subcontinent of what is today India, Bangladesh, Pakistan, Ceylon. It's probably another Bangladesh. So there you have it. More troops were used to starve Ireland than to conquer that subcontinent. And a lot of people, increasing numbers of people, are taking my book to go on a tour of Ireland, and they use my book, they use its map, to tour the mass graves of Ireland, particularly the mass grave nearest to their ancestors' or birthplace. Because my map shows which British regiment removed the food from that particular district. So they're learning which British regiment starved their ancestors by taking my book with them. And I applaud them. And my wife and I, starting in 1999, have been putting up memorials over those mass graves. We don't have very many up yet, but we're doing it steadily. And what's more, all of our memorials that we're putting over mass graves all name the specific British regiments that put those people in those mass graves. We name the regiments, the ones that were there. We name the dates they entered. We don't put the on the memorials. We don't carve. We put their names carved in stone over those mass graves, but we don't include the dates of their arrival in that area and the dates of their departures. But that's in the book. Those dates are in the book. So all you need to know about one of the world's gravest genocides is within that book. So I'm suggesting that many more people might want to do what tourists have been doing for the last nearly a decade now, and that is they bring in my book to Ireland with them to find out which British regiment starved their ancestors. There were 67 British regiments in Ireland in those years. The total number of the British Army, the total size of the British Army at that time was 130 regiments. So half the 130 would be 65 regiments. So there were 67 regiments in Ireland, thus more than half the British Army were in Ireland, and their sole task was removing Ireland's agricultural product from the country and away from the people who had produced it, starving them to death. That is what happened, and that is what my book does. I thought that my website would be enough to complete the job, but the big lie operatives, it didn't shut them down all completely, as I hoped my IrishHolocaust.org might do. They abandoned many of their lies, but they added new lies, new falsehoods. And so then I thought, I will use their medium. I will go to a book also. So I'm expecting that my book will eventually shame the so-called famine writers into silence. I'm certainly expecting it will. I can't imagine. In fact, it's 15 years ago already since some of them were accosted by people carrying my pamphlet asking, why are you covering up for the British Army? And there was never a coherent answer. So we're making it more difficult for the lie to continue. But we're operating against the Irish government. In the schools and the colleges, high schools and universities of Ireland, the famine is still being taught. This is hard to believe, so many years after the truth has gotten out via my work. But the Irish government still have not accepted. They're still covering up for the British government. And you'd wonder how long will the Irish government continue to do that? The Marist brother who taught me back in Castlereagh, County Roscommon, and also, by the way, taught the same FBI agent who warned us about his FBI colleague crimes that would be starting against us soon. We both were taught by Brother Enda, a Marist brother. In recent years, ex-alumni of Marist Brother Enda asked him, Brother, if you now say it was a Holocaust, a genocide, why did you teach us all famine? And Brother Enda answered, I had no choice. I had to teach the curriculum as provided to me by the government. Now that is a shockingly weak, lame excuse for the covering up of a genocide. And I'm so sorry to know that this one, otherwise a very conscientious Marist brother, would have lied his entire teaching career about a genocide of his own people, and he covered it up for his entire half-century teaching career, an otherwise wonderful, truth-telling brother, Marist brother, Enda. It's a very sad story, but that is the truth. That is what happened. And that one brother, in retirement, began to call it Holocaust and genocide. So he knew he had been doing wrong all those years, and he stopped doing it when he was no longer required by government to do it. But that tells us all we need to know also about the government, doesn't it? The government of Ireland.
Certainly. And applicable to this government also here in the United States, that they have a certain curriculum and it must be followed. And what they teach is directed by, well, the federal government.
Yes, that's where we are, and how we must break out of it, the best way to break out of it. It's not easy, I can attest to that, and nothing was ever done to any of those crimes. In fact, the lawyers who saved us, we had seven attorneys all working for us, one of them pro bono, the rest all legal rates, and if the case had gone on, we would have been completely destroyed. But we got their evidentiary audio tape, and it had been so massively doctored that it could not be denied. And what's more, it was proven, scientifically proven, by one of Chicago's most eminent sound engineering companies to have been doctored, so, you know, massively tampered with. They cut out 45 minutes out of the middle of the audio tape that contained our official meeting, and left little more than the pre-meeting and post-meeting chit-chat where we're all talking together and is inaudible. That's what they were presenting as the evidence against us, and they put their own spin on it. So we were able to prove, well, eventually the U.S. prosecutor, James Fleissner, had to plead U.S. Judge George Lindbergh to be allowed to abandon all charges against all of us. And that's what happened. But none of those seven, eight attorneys, none of them ever lived up to their promise to take our case for damages and against the criminals. So we sustained those losses, that entire cost of defending ourselves against these FBI and MI5 crimes were borne by ourselves. And if we had not been well-to-do, we would have gone straight from jail to trial to our life in prison. If I hadn't been successfully framed for the Langert murders, in which case I would have gotten lethal injection. But David Biro, the murderer, saved me by blabbing through his FBI cover. So that's where America is. It's very, very sad. These particular crimes happen to be right on the path that leads to full-spectrum dominance. There would have been no crimes against the people of Iraq or Afghanistan, Syria, and Libya, and there would have been no massive invasion of people into Europe if the British army had not been freed up.
That's true. Chris, you're an incredible individual, you and Mary both, because you're both in this together, that you would put memorials up at these grave sites. You didn't have to do that. You wrote the book, you have the website, but you've gone beyond what an ordinary person would do by memorializing these sites in stone yet.
We are in grief, and I'm not overly emotional, but Mary and I are both in grief at the in consideration of what those doomed people, what they must
suffered.
Have known and felt. They were doomed. There was no one who could give them justice. The law was British. The law was part of the genocide. Their own Irish Catholic hierarchy from Rome were controlled by the British government. The justices of the peace were the local English landlord. There was nobody. They were doomed. There was nobody they could appeal to. And I must say, one of the consequences of that is that on a per capita basis, the people of Ireland have been among the world's most generous for terrible events in other countries. They donate a very large amount of cash to cover catastrophes in other countries. That's kind of a result of a previous gross injustice, which in a sense they haven't completely forgotten, even while they're lied about it to them by their own government. Their own government is covering up, but there's enough knowledge locally. And then my book is third printing is just now being distributed in Dublin.
I'm sorry, I don't mean to interrupt, but you have given these people a measure of justice. That is just incredible.
After they were murdered, they were then smeared for the next 170 years. They were smeared by the history books, which say that they stupidly fell into a lethal trap of their own making,
right.
That they grew only one failure-prone crop, and therefore it was a form of improvement of the gene pool. By their dying off, they died of their own terminal stupidity. My book demolishes that smear, and it vindicates those murdered people. It shows who murdered them. It shows, first of all, that they produced an enormous amount of other edibles of all kinds that was shipped out at gunpoint, but that was Irish production. The English landlords were gentlemen. A gentleman at the time was a person who never worked. And they were the ones who were running Ireland, people who never worked. Everything produced in Ireland was produced by the Irish. They were robbed of it. And then after they were robbed, they were smeared that they died of their own stupidity. My book ends that. And I must say, Irish America also need to know that their ancestors were not stupid. They're not a stupid people. They have been smeared as stupid. In fact, I was a child in Chicago. Before we ever went to Ireland, I remember Pat and Mike jokes. And they, Pat and Mike jokes was the standard at the time, and they all had to do with Irish, supposed Irish stupidity. In the 1970s, Polish jokes came along. And I must say, the only Polish joke I liked was, what happens, what's black and blue and lies on the floor? And that's someone who tells Polish jokes. But in any event, and I thought that was a proper response to people who tell Polish, because the Polish jokes were similar to the so-called Irish ones in that they all referred to stupidity. And I don't know why that was done to the Polish for so long, but it was.
Right. Now, what was the population of Ireland in 1845? And they produced
about
twice
12
as
million.
Much as they needed, right?
Yes, it was about 12 million, and there would have been close to 13 by 1851. The censuses were every ten years. The man who was a leader of the 1841 census and the sole commissioner of the 1851 census was William Wilde. His grandfather came to Ireland from England to be the estate manager for the English landlord who owned the property on which our farm was. Our farm was these 30 or 40 or 50 thousand acre English estates in Ireland were split up between 1900 and 1920 into typically 28 acre survival farms and distributed to the people who had been producing on them. And so my parents bought one of those in 1947. And we had our own cows, and we made our own butter and milk and fed calves and pigs and poultry and had oats crops and sheep and sent some of our wool fleeces to the local woolen mills to have blankets made, that kind of thing. And so we lived there until I came back to the States in 1954. But all of our neighbors all were, and my father was still, we were all still paying. In addition to taxes, the taxes were called rates. They paid for the schools and the repairing the roads and everything. But in addition to those farm taxes, there were what was called rent, an annual rent that had to be an absolute obligation paid once a year. If you didn't pay it, you'd lose your farm. And that was to amortize what had been given to the English landlords who had been bought out and sent back to repatriated to England between 1900 and 1920. In our case, it was Lord Mount Sanford. The Lord and the Sand, the Lord and the Mount, were added to his name as a result of his plus a bribe for having been willing to sign on to the surrender of Ireland to Britain in 1801. So making it the Union of Britain and Ireland. So that was his game. But he was the English landlord in our area. He had some 30,000 acres or so. None of these people had paid for their land. It was taken by conquest. And they should have been paid
acres.
They should have been paid what their ancestors had paid for it. Nothing. But they were paid so far over the market at the time, around 1900, 1910, that to keep the annual rents lower than the extortionate rents that the Irish had to pay previously to the English landlords, that in order to keep those annual payments less than the previous extortion amounts, that payment, that amortization of the goodbye gift to the English landlords in Ireland, that was extended to 68.5 years, 68 and a half years. And so that tells you the crime. There was the crime right there. The crime was acknowledged by the fact of that it had to be extended for 68 and a half years. So my father was still paying it still in 1970. I paid it until I left there. I didn't pay it. My parents paid it until I left there in December 1953. And my father was still paying it in the 1970s.
Oh, my gosh. All righty. We're going to a real quick break. We'll be right back.
For the the past 14 years, it's been my privilege to host the National Intel Report on RBN, to offer a platform to interview exceptional guests, to provoke critical thought, and examine evidence, whether real, fake, or somewhere in between, and allow our audience to call in and participate with your input and questions, in order to help us all reach an educated decision and arrive at our own truth. Our world has changed. It's now been turned on its head. Real is now considered fake, and mainstream fake is now pushed as real, rather than any clear thinking, consensus, or rationale.
Those few remaining beacons of light, the ones still shining through the mainstream media lies, propaganda, and deception, are being viciously attacked at every level through attempts at censorship, threatening advertisers, jailing hosts, and even killing journalists brave enough to speak the truth to you. We are in a war for our very freedom and existence, and through these despicable acts, freedom haters, collectivists, and communitarians have shown they will stop at nothing to blot out these last few beacons of light. Truth is becoming increasingly more difficult to unmask, just as the term unmasking itself is spoken by those usually anonymous sources. They promote their lies, wishing to mask the truths by ignoring it, vilifying it, or conspiratorializing it into a black hole abyss.
Regrettably, RBN has reached the tipping point, and through internal audit and actuarial review, it has now been determined that the only life raft of survival to this network is to go the way of PBS, that being audience supported. Like a cornered animal, the left with veracity is pulling out all the stops with every effort to effectively blacken our beacon forever. Help us, folks. Help yourselves. Don't let our light stop shining. Our motto has always been, because you can handle the truth. It's time to review your budget, folks. If you want the truth to keep flowing through RBN, go to republicbroadcasting.org and become a regular monthly donor of 30, 40, 50, or 100 or more a month and ensure you keep the truth flowing.
Without the right accessories, any guy can be off the mark. Whether you've invested thousands in your arsenal or you own a single trusted firearm, a visit to AROutfitting.com is in order. It's one of the finest online selections of tactical optics and AR parts and add-ons, like EOTech, quick target acquisition with no peripheral loss. Browse the full range of Nikon scopes and binoculars. AROutfitting.com can illuminate your world with Streamlight gun-mounted lights from keychain to large handhelds, up to 1,100 lumens. Find some stability with Battenfield tactical bipods. AirOutfitting.com has CMMG gun parts, barrels, assemblies, handguards, part kits, and more. Plus Magpul clips and magazines. I know I've got you excited, so take a breath. Head to AirOutfitting.com. The site's super easy to navigate and features a ton of technical info, including links to manuals. We also welcome vendor and manufacturer inquiries. Remember, if you don't see it, we can get it at AROutfitting.com.
Welcome back. This is Deanna, and our guest today is Christopher Fogarty. His website is IrishHolocaust.org, and please do visit that website. Click on the map. Look at all of the information that he has there, and I just applaud you so much. It's just... you're just a terrific individual to do what you've done, for you and Mary to do what you've done. It's just amazing. If people want
to... thank you very much. I would just like, again, seeing that this is St. Patrick's Day, it is a good day to... and it's a beautiful day in Chicago, and it's a good day to tell your listeners that, again, that the Irish did not go down easily. It took more British firepower to starve Ireland between 1845 and 1850 than had been needed to conquer the Indian subcontinent.
Yes.
It took more than half the British army. The British army at the time totaled 130 regiments, about 1,000 in each regiment, but 67 of them were in Ireland, removing Ireland's food at gunpoint between 1845 and 1850. And that is what we're all taught later in school. You'll still hear it around today, fools talking about the Irish famine, but we're winning it. Slowly we're winning it. Every person who looks at my map and reads my book, they stop using the word famine regarding Ireland, and they start using either the new word that was coined by Raphael Lemkin post-World War II, which is Holocaust, which is genocide, the killing of a people, or they use the word that was used in Ireland at the time, and that is Holocaust. among the English speakers, or on par more, the Irish speakers. The Irish language, the Gael Giori, the Irish speakers were essentially wiped out in those years. They were the least favored people of the English in Ireland. They were the ones that were targeted. It was the Irish speakers who, above all, the British wanted to get rid of. The plan, of course, was the destruction of the Irish people also completely, and their replacement with transplants from England. It's very sad. I wished we had never, that this crime had never happened, that it was not there for us to have to learn. And ever since I was doing my grandfather's biography over in the Britain's National Archives, and we've made a number of trips there, each one for specific purposes, it's very sad. The history of the world is very sad. And I must say, the English Empire was one of the gravest crimes that ever existed. And when Cromwell went to Ireland, it turns out that he was financed by Jewish bankers in London. I didn't learn that until fairly recently. And it also seems that the English landlords of Ireland, having gotten a fake title which they themselves created, they then mortgaged that Irish land to the hilt, with, again, bankers in London, who are called Jews, whether they, I suppose a great many of them perhaps were Jews, and pressure from their lenders might have prompted some of the genocidal practices they engaged in. However, in my book, I don't go deeply into that in my book, partly because I don't have that secondary or tertiary information. It was enough for me to know and to pass on the word that, again, that the Irish were murdered. They didn't die of terminal stupidity. And I think we must do that. We must always tell the truth wherever we find it, particularly when it comes to genocide. The perpetrators of genocide will always explain why these people had to go, that there were too many of them, or that they were unworthy, or they were not quite human, or they were savage, or something like that. But there's always a lie that must sustain the genocide. And when we hear these days of ragheads or all the old stupid words, let's not engage in them, because they usually are cover for a plan to do great harm to such people. Let's not use those smear words.
Indeed. Well, the British do have quite a record. In 1877, just in India, they starved, almost 27 million people to death. And
I had a nice conversation on it. Yes, go ahead.
Oops. They use the same principles. Just take the food. We do have a break, and when we come back, then we'll talk about that. Be right back.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Do you know there is an ongoing war right here in America? Are you aware that U.S. citizens have been classified as enemies of the state since 1933? Have you recognized that our entire government is really a vast network of interlocking corporations engaged in commerce? Look up Title 28, Section 3002. Tune in to In Defense of Humanity on Saturday nights at 7 p.m. Central Time. Find out what's really going on, and learn how to protect yourself and your family as flesh and blood men and women living in a corporate reality.
Many people write us about their experience with Extendivite. Allow me to read you a few from Amazon.com. By Mel. Great product. My husband and father-in-law use it regularly. Both my husband and father-in-law have had significant change in their blood pressure and overall health. By Amazon customer. It works for me. Returned to buy the tincture and the capsules as they were on sale during February. Unlike some other products, this one worked for blood pressure and occasional irregular heartbeat. Extendivite produced noticeable results after just two bottles, a four-month supply. I take Extendivite three times a day, every day. I think this supplement has helped with my increased fitness regime and to lower my blood pressure. Tell us your story. Get Extendivite today. Call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
Welcome back. This is Deanna. And our guest is Christopher Fogarty. And his website is irishholocaust.org. And we were talking just before the break about the number of people who were starved in India due to Britain's export policies. And of course, we can talk about so many other people, 7 million people starved in the Ukraine during Stalin's first five-year plan. 3 million people in Bengal starved due to the policies of Roosevelt and Churchill during World War II. 170 million people were slaughtered by governments during the 20th century. 10 million died in World War I, and 50 million died in World War II. Of those, the military killed during World War II, almost 70% were civilians. So anyway, there's a lot
this is,
of
killing. This is all unbearable. It's so desperately sad. We've got to do something about it. Surely there might be too many people if procreation were to continue according to the natural law, you might say. But the weeding out of people by government, the destruction of entropy, genocide, is not the way to go. It's so very, very sad. Churchill called for the gassing of the Kurds. When they took over from the Ottoman Empire during World War One, an Englishman and a Frenchman were assigned to redraw the map of the Middle East. And they maliciously drew those lines through the middle of tribal grounds. And the Kurds, who refused to pay a fortune each year at Christmas time to the British, to the English royal family, in the form of jewelry, jewels. Their tribal grounds of 27 million were erased from the map of the Middle East as a direct consequence of their refusal to pay tribute to the British royal family. And they have been, their land was given mostly to Turkey, but partly to Syria, Iraq, and Iran. And they've been genocided ever since with the collaboration of a very vindictive British government. It is so sad what's going on. And now we, our government, in our name, are using those Kurds against the Syrians. And the Kurds are fighting for what they believe to be a part of their own homeland. But as soon as they have fulfilled their function for our neocons, they will be re-sacrificed. They're being sacrificed now by fighting in a war that they have no particular purpose in, except in their own minds to free part of their own country. But they're being betrayed. Even while they're fighting and putting their lives on the line, they're being betrayed by the neocons. And the majority of the Kurds are in eastern Turkey. The same thing applies there. The Turks have been genociding them ever since. It is sad beyond words. I had a good discussion on a Dublin radio show a couple of years ago with Madhusri Mukherjee, a Bangladeshi writer. She wrote Churchill's Crimes, I think might be the name of it. Churchill is in the title of her book, and the murder of the people of that part of India at the time, but that part of British India at the time, where they removed all the food from the people, that the people themselves, they were robbed of their own product. And so one of the chief differences between the genocide by the British in Ireland and the one in today's Bangladesh is that there are no mass graves in Bangladesh. I just don't know what happened to all the bodies, but the map of Ireland is dotted with mass graves. On my map, I show about 180 mass graves, and there are typically thousands in each mass grave. There's 30,000 in one where there was a mass said on November 3rd last. And the bishop who said the mass had to be brought over from France because the Irish Catholic hierarchy are seemingly too afraid of the government to have anything to do acknowledging the British genocide of Ireland. It's so very sad. There's probably 100,000 in Cork and Cork city suburbs alone in the mass graves there. A total again of 5.2 million. Mind you, that's close, but we will never know for certain. And we're doing what we can to acknowledge their existence. By the way, in my criticism of this this murder by military, I must say that I served in the American Army. I served in occupied France, 1958, 59, and 60. My job, I traveled around Western France picking up avgases, mogases, lubes, fuels, and brought them to my laboratory to run tests on to make sure they passed military federal specification for use. It was at the intake of the pipeline that runs from Saint-Nazaire at the mouth of the Loire River across into Germany, the NATO pipeline. And it was fed in at our station. That's where it was fed into from ocean tankers. So I've served in the American military, was happy to do so, but I don't think that I would serve in the last few wars we have had. There were criminal wars, and I'm waiting for true patriotic Americans to stand up and do something about the criminals who have been leading our country for the last few decades. We are hoping that there will be that America will reassert itself and end this takeover of our government by these criminals. Madhusri Mukherjee is one very, very fine woman. She did a wonderful job for her people, and it badly needed doing. And again, the perpetrator there was Winston Churchill, Another site I would have to draw to people's attention to is The Crimes of Britain. It's a Facebook page, The Crimes of Britain. And it's very well done by an Irishman living in England. And it includes a lot of photographs of people who are being starved to death in India and in Africa and in different parts of the world. It's quite a page. Do look it up. The Crimes of Britain. And again, anyone going to Ireland, if they bring my map with them, they can do a tour of Ireland's mass graves. It's history by itself, and say a prayer for the repose of the souls in those mass graves. There was no justice for them as long as they lived, and they were smeared after they were murdered. They have been smeared ever since, and the Irish government to this day is doing nothing about it. They do provide the concealment memorials, sad victim of the famine kind of thing, cover up. The biggest the Irish state television, their main communicator in Ireland, is state owned Radio Teleficht Éireann. I was interviewed a few months ago relative to a memorial that my wife and I put up in Smarmore, County Louth, where there are a few thousand buried from the RD workhouse of 1845-1850. And he insulted me, referred to me as Trump, for example. the worst smear he could think of using, and essentially accused me of subverting local government by doing something that taking
How
over
awful.
A government. Yes, imagine. And he had on, and the Irish government have set up fake archaeological and historical groups across the country, and they had one on who claims to be the leader of the local, of the County Louth, precisely historical and archaeological society, who couldn't deny that there was a mass grave that my wife and I marked in Smarmore. In fact, the entire northern half of the cemetery, the northern half of it, is a mass grave. And people have been going there since 1845 to pray for the repose of the souls buried in that mass grave. And there are people still going there today. And this man, who claims to be or is presented on national radio as a leader of the County Louth Historical and Archaeological Society,
gives his
quote professional opinion unquote that there's no mass grave there. And then another woman was brought on who tried to tie this mass grave that Mary and I put up last year, tried to say that it was responsible for the violence in Northern Ireland that peaked in 1973 and was almost disappeared by 1984. But she tried to attribute that violence to our memorial put up last year.
How ridiculous.
Yeah. It's not alone evil, but the stupidity is hard to believe.
Indeed.
Oh, and then they also had Christine Keneally, and she's the main prolific author of Irish famine books, quote famine unquote books, and she claimed that a million died and a million emigrated. In other words, she not alone claimed that they died of stupidity, but also that there were far fewer died. And so she has been brought over from the University of Liverpool over to Quinnipiac University in Connecticut, and she is one of their main historians there today. And a so-called Irish Famine Museum has been set up in Hamden, Connecticut, near Quinnipiac, that tells the whole world how the Irish died of stupidity by growing only one failure-prone crop. And that's
how
going on
awful.
Today. That's being promoted today.
And people believe it. People.
Well, if it's the only information they have,
I know.
They must think that there's some reason why this is said, and it's all very plausible. And of course, we've heard it all our lives. The first person who told a part of the truth, Cecil Woodham Smith, wrote her book, The Great Hunger, in 1962. She was smeared for 30 years after she wrote her book. And she was smeared because she named 13 of the food removal regiments.
Oh.
Now, she buried those truths under tens of thousands of words of falsehood. That, for example, there no oats were grown in County Sligo or County Donegal. A complete falsehood, because my book shows the location of every oat mill and oat grain kill that was in operation in those years. It shows how much was transported out of those counties during those years. So the notion that none was grown there is completely false. My book refutes it with facts. And
right.
So that is what this woman. So this woman, however, the truth that these 13 regiments, which she names, were in Ireland removing the food, for having said that much truth, she was smeared for the rest of her life, essentially.
Oh my goodness! I have that book, and
I see. Well, there's a lot of truth in it, but I ended up. It seemed sympathetic, but after I read the book, I continued to use the word famine. Because nothing in the book, on balance, the book did not insist that it was a genocide.
Right.
You'll find in my book that you have now, you'll find where I give her full credit for exposing the fact of the food removal for the first time in history. But then she buried it under a lot of falsehood, a great deal of falsehood. So I ended up using the word famine, despite having read her book. And her detractors smeared her, even though she didn't change any minds. But she offended them by naming 13 of the 67 food removal regiments. My book names all of them, where they came from, their recruitment area, what year, what month and date and year they went into a district, what date, month, and year they were removed from a district. So it's all there in my book, and it cannot be disputed, because it comes from the part of the British record that they cannot destroy.
Right.
If they were to remove what I have extracted from it, there would be no British history would be possible, because it's what their army was doing in all those years, and they cannot destroy that. By the way, many of the generals in their army were English landlords from Ireland. For example, a landlord near the, not far from our property, about 8 miles away, was the nearest part of his estate, Lord Pakenham. He was killed as a general leading the army January 1815 in New Orleans, the Battle of New Orleans, you know, down the Mississippi to the Gulf of Mexico. That was Lord Pakenham who was in charge of that army, the general, and he was killed there. Lord Ross of Ross Trevor, County Down, lost his life a few days after he had burnt the White House with his British regiment.
Right.
And he attacked Baltimore a few days later. Which was observed by Francis Scott Key and became our American national anthem. General Ross was shot by a sniper during that attack. And so that's how things go. The man who led the Irish Holocaust, the man in charge of the 67 regiments in Ireland, General Sir Edward Blakeney, B-L-A-K-E-N-E-N-E-Y, Blakeney, English-born, but the son of an English landlord in Ireland. He was in charge of the 67 regiments the entire time from 1845 through 1850. And as they approached the end of his genocide that he led, Queen Victoria awarded him the Order of the Garter. He was already a knight of the British Empire, but she awarded him the Order of the Garter. The Garter has something to do with the king King Henry VIII having been caught doing something with a lady's leg, and he got a number of people who denied it, and they became he made them all members of the Order of the Garter. Oniswat Kimalipans, damned be he who sees and thinks or thinks and but that's the motto of the English system ever since. Oniswat Kimalipans. When they were still speaking French from the Norman invasion at that time.
Wow. It's so
that was Lord. So that was General Sir Edward Blakeney. There's a place named for his family that still exists in Ireland, in County Galway, near Mount Bellew. The village of Castle Blakeney is named for that family.
Okay, we do have a quick 3-minute break, and we'll be right back.
Honey, I'm home. I grabbed a newspaper on the way home. Look at all the news today.
Don't you know that all you're going to get in the newspaper is propaganda, twisted news, and false information?
Honey, this is a national newspaper. It has to be true.
Ha! For some reason, the majority of the population believe anything the mainstream media tells them. The newspaper doesn't give out the important attention of what's happening to this country and news that affects our daily lives. Say, does that newspaper mention anything about the North American Union?
No, not that I can see.
I didn't think so. You need to go to www.newswithviews.com, where truth is more important than political correctness. That's www.newswithviews.com. Hey, don't throw that away. We can use that in the birdcage.
Okay, move over. Let me start reading newswithviews.com.
The truth? Read all about it at newswithviews.com. Newswithviews.com, where reality shatters illusion.
We are the American Freedom Party. This is the most urgent time in the history of Western civilization. In the year 1900, white people of European descent comprised 35% of the world population. Today it is less than 9% and falling fast. Europe is being overrun with Middle Eastern immigrants, and America's founding stock is rapidly being replaced with third world peoples from around the globe. For the last 50 years, every influential institution in this nation, our schools and universities, our media, our churches and our employers, have promoted policies and principles that teach whites to be ashamed of their great heritage and birthright. We, who in the 1950s, the 1960s, and 1970s were the world's dominant force, are now so afraid of being called racist that we were quailing towards irrelevance and extinction. Join the American Freedom Party today. Reach us at theamericanfreedomparty.us or call us at 701-317-5317. Paid for by the American Freedom Party.
Do you or a loved one suffer migraine headaches? Listen to what scientist Kurt Hendricks has to say.
35 million people in the United States suffer with debilitating migraines. If you or a loved one are one of them, you need to know about MigRelief. Hi, I'm Kurt Hendricks, the scientist that formulated and patented the MigRelief migraine formula. MigRelief is a non-prescription dietary supplement recommended by neurologists, pharmacists, and pediatricians to address nutritional deficiencies in both adults and children over 2 with migraines. Try MigRelief for 3 months and see the powerful difference it can make in your life or get your money back, no questions asked. Go to MIG911.com or call 800-MIG-7354. You can change your life today.
So if you suffer from migraines, don't wait. Call 800-MIG-7354. That's 800-MIG-7354 or visit MIG911.com.
Our guest is Christopher Fogarty. Didn't the Rothschilds set up some sort of faux charity in order to look good and to help the hunger in Ireland?
I think they might have. I didn't dwell on it. Didn't spend any time on it because I don't like participating in cover-ups. But
sure.
It's important to know, however, that at the time of the before the rising, about 1913, when Ireland was seen to be headed toward freedom, the Rothschilds donated £100,000 toward the British loyalists in the six counties. Arthur Guinness donated another 100,000, and Rudyard Kipling, the poet laureate of England at the time, gave 50,000. So between them, it was £250,000, a very large sum of money at the time, which were used to buy rifles by the Ulster Volunteer Force to work against, with the British against Irish freedom. So those three, Rothschild, Arthur Guinness of the Guinness Brewing Company, and
Kipling.
You know, Kipling and Kipling. But well, when you think of all those people who are keeping the Guinness family floating today.
Right.
It's so sad. It's so, so poor. And it, for a long time, Irish patriots did their best to stop this spending of money on their traitors, on the people who were destroying their country. And particularly in America, Guinness is really well promoted here. When my uncle, Kieran, joined Michael Collins's Free State Army, they were the pro-treaty, the pro-partition army in Ireland at the time, the one that was founded and funded and munitioned and armed by the British government. He fought with them against real Irish patriots. And after they had defeated the true Irish patriots, the real IRA, almost all on both sides had been IRA, but there was a split, one for the treaty, for the partition of Ireland, the other against the partition of Ireland. The pro-partition party, the pro-British party, won, backed up by the Catholic Church also, I must sadly say. But my uncle Kieran was on that side, the wrong side, and he was offered a job at Guinness's brewery in Dublin as a consequence, at a time when jobs were scarce, because he had upheld British rule in Ireland. He didn't take it. He came to the States instead. But he would have a job at Guinness, a value job at the time, when jobs were scarce. But again, they were saved for those who supported British rule in Ireland. And yet that is still identified strongly with Irish people. You have to laugh at the gullibility of
the irony. Yes.
Yes, irony is, it is indeed. So again, this St. Patrick's Day 2018, we must never forget that our people did not go down easily. It took more than half the British army to destroy them between 1845 and 1850. 67 regiments of its 130 regiment army were in Ireland, removing Ireland's food at gunpoint to the marketplace of Europe.
The wonderful festivities here in Chicago on St. Patrick's Day. We're at the top of the hour. We will be right back, and we can talk a little bit about what goes on in Chicago regarding St. Patrick's Day. All right, we'll be right back.
Extendivite, a 7-herb combination of garlic, cayenne, hawthorn, bilberry, ginkgo biloba, valerian, and milk thistle. Extendivite is designed to strengthen the heart and arteries and help the body heal itself. Doctors are not able to explain the improvements they are seeing in their patients' health who are taking Extendivite. People who once needed more pills are now taking less and getting better. Due to the unexplainable improvements in their patients' health, more doctors are calling to order Extendivite for themselves. Help Extendivite make your doctor a believer. Extendivite is available in capsule or liquid form for just $69.95 for a 2-month supply. To get started, call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.